This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Hello, everyone. This is Basma Farhad of the People Speak Radio. Here we believe when the people speak, they make a difference. You can listen to the People Speak live on BBS Radio every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday nights, 8 to 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, or by going to our site at www.thepeoplespeakradio.net. There you can also listen live or to our past shows on our iPod Ready Archive section. That's www.thepeoplespeakradio.net. And if you have a Nokia phone, you can also listen via satellite. Just go to the website for details. And that's right, you heard it. We are here Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday nights from 8 to 9 o'clock. For those of you that would like to call in and speak to our guests, our toll-free numbers are 877-489-6350. And toll-free in the U.S. and Canada, 888-228-4494. I'm really thrilled to have with us Joe Lentini tonight. Joe is a survivor of the attack, the infamous attack of the USS Liberty, an American intelligence reconnaissance ship that was brutally attacked, purposely attacked, viciously attacked. 32 soldiers died, and Joe, what was it, 172 or 174 that were injured?
Injured. It was in that number, in that range. Two-thirds of the crew was either killed or wounded.
Yeah. You know, Joe, for those of thank you for being with us, first of all. And I this is something that I had discussed with Joe and some of our previous guests from the survivors of the USS Liberty. This is an important story. We have a crew of people that have gotten on in age, and this story can't be forgotten. Thus far, there's been no reparations, no apologies, no official statement or investigation into this attack. And the men and the survivors of the USS Liberty are getting older, and we felt that it's important for us to document and archive the stories of these men. So that's one of the reasons that we have Joe here. Joe has an interesting perspective on the ship. Thank you for being with us, Joe.
Well, you're welcome. I'm glad to do it.
Joe, you were a little bit different from some of the other guys on the ship in that you were never really questioned. Some of the, you know, when debriefing happens, and this was something that Joe was explaining to me, when debriefing happens, the debriefing after an event is what you can do or not do after the fact. Joe is not restricted, unlike a majority of the survivors of the USS Liberty, in talking due to the fact that for whatever reason, he never really was debriefed. He kind of got lost in the shuffle. And in his case, he was never approached, not even as far as any kind of a threat, like many of the other survivors were. Some faced death threats and imprisonment by our own government. And you never had to deal with that, did you, Joe?
No, I had just stepped out of the room. The torpedo came through, killed everybody in my division, dismembered them, actually. Almost killed me. I came to with a broken leg in water, and I groaned when someone stepped on my broken leg, and they hauled me out. Otherwise, I would have drowned down there. They air evac'd me to the America. They took me to Italy. When they got me a little bit more stable, they took me to Germany. As soon as they thought I was stable enough, they put me on a plane and flew me to Portsmouth Naval Hospital. And next thing you know, I was back to duty as a naval instructor, and the Pueblo was taken, and I got exasperated and asked if I qualified for a medical. I ended up out of the Navy, drawing disability pension ever since, and no one I was the last person to see the fellows in the comm center. I was a senior comm center petty officer, and no one ever asked me how did the training affect those guys under pressure. What did they do? How did they do it? How did their military, the military type training, how did that impact them? Were there any things that, as a senior NCO, non-commissioned officer, you could suggest that we could do to improve things? None of those things ever happened, and no one ever got me aside and said, here's what you can say, here's what you can't say, here's where you can go, here's where you can't go, sign on the dotted line. None of those things ever happened in my case.
Joe, do you think that that was, that you just slipped through the cracks somehow?
Absolutely. I absolutely do.
Is there some kind of a statute as to how long after the fact something can be done to restrict you from talking?
I don't think so. I suspect the idea of something being classified depends on what it is and on the people that did the original classification. There's things that I did while I was aboard that ship that I won't talk about to this very day. But that doesn't include what happened on the 8th of June. There was nothing classified about what happened on the 8th of June as far as I know.
Joe, can you give us a condensed version of that day and the attack on the USS Liberty for those of our listeners that have not heard the story?
Okay, I'd love to. We had been moved from the west coast of Africa to Rota, Spain, to drop off the linguists that we were using on the west coast of Africa and to pick up Arab linguists. And then we went on station about 12 to 13 miles off the Sinai Peninsula, where we sailed a kind of a strange pattern that sent us back and forth, but we were always in the same spot for the six-day war that had broken out. It was an excellent opportunity to listen to the way that the Arab states did war, how their command systems worked, how their radars worked, what have you. It was a really good opportunity. Well, anyway, we were there, and on the 8th of June, the morning of the 8th of June, it was a clear, cloudless day. We were 12 to 13 miles offshore, sailing between 7 and 8 knots in our little pattern, holding pattern. There were no clouds. There was very little wind. There was just about enough wind that when we sailed into it, the at sea American flag or pennant stood out, and so did any other pennants we had up. But there was very little of any kind of wind. You could see from the ship with the naked eye to shore and see smoke from what we thought was the fighting, but history tells us it was the Israelis destroying captured munitions. It was just a beautiful day. And around about noon or close to that time, the captain called a general quarters drill, and we had just secured from that general quarters drill where we secure the ship and prepare for battle, only because we were so near a war zone, even though we were in international waters. The captain wanted us to be prepared, and he even commented and bragged on us. We gave us a well done. We had made the ship watertight in record time. Now, the Liberty only had 450 caliber machine guns and some 45 caliber pistols and a couple of rifles. That was our total armament, but we were still going through the drill. We apparently on the bridge, and I found this out later, I wasn't personally there when they did this, our bridge watch recorded high-speed surface craft coming from an Israeli port and turned out to be on a direct course to the Liberty. It was tracked. They were tracked. And shortly after we tracked them, we tracked high-speed aircraft passing over those high-speed surface craft. And shortly after that, the officer of the deck, the fellow that was in charge of the ship while the captain wasn't, called photographer to the bridge, because by then we knew that these jets were going to fly over us. We were flying the American flag. We could see to shore. Everything said there was nothing to worry about, so we called photographer to the bridge. And a first-class petty officer went to the bridge with his camera, was sighting the camera and saw one of the jets coming in. They had circled around from behind and were coming straight down the bow. And as he was focusing, he noticed orange flame coming from the jet. And next thing you know, that fellow was picking himself up off the deck. Slugs from their cannon had, one of them had passed right down the telephoto lens of the camera and knocked him out, and the battle began. Now, at that time, I was down in the comm center, two decks below main deck. We had secured from general quarters, but I still had some work to do down there, again, being one of the watch supervisors. And so immediately the bridge called, "General quarters, the ship is under attack by unidentified aircraft. This is no drill." And down below decks, we heard ping, ping, ping across the deck, which was the cannon fire. Then we heard explosions. What was going on topside? The jets crisscrossed and strafed us from bow to stern, port to starboard, starboard to port. They put at least two rockets through all four machine gun mounts. They had every antenna on board. They had every hit, every hatch topside. They hit the bridge directly multiple times. The executive officer took a hit and bled to death on the bridge. The quartermaster that was steering the ship took a direct hit and was blown to pieces. The commanding officer took a shrapnel hit in the leg and had to work laying down with a tourniquet on his leg. It was nasty. Guys were shot off the ladders trying to get up to the machine guns to defend the ship. I don't know what they would have done because they couldn't go vertical with those 50 cals, and they certainly couldn't track an incoming jet. When those jets ran out of munitions, more jets were called in, and they were dropping napalm canisters or burning jelly on us. Fellows that I know that lived through it were fighting fires until the fire hoses were shot so full of holes that there was no more water pressure. One of those fellows was working with the postal clerk, and they said, "Well, let's go back inside and see where we could be of help, go to a damage control site and see what we can do." And they went in different sides of the ship for God knows what reason. The one fella made it. The postal clerk got blown up and died. It went on like that until under fire, some of our electronic technicians, a communication or a cryptographic technician, and a radio man under fire managed to get one of the shot-up antennas. And these guys had hit every single life raft, every single lifeboat, the only gasoline drum, and all the antennas on board, and there were many antennas. They managed to get one of these antennas on a voice system to work, and they got a help call out, and it was received, and the 6th Fleet went to general quarters and launched aircraft to come to our aid, which coincides real close with the Israelis suddenly discovering their mistake. But not before the torpedo boats caught up, fired 5 torpedoes at us, 4 missed, and 1 hit the room I just stepped out of and killed, dismembered, all of my division except for 2 other guys whose general quarters stations were elsewhere. And so it went. When they finally they were shooting up life rafts that were in the water, that is the torpedo boats. And I might add that according to eyewitnesses topside and according to ship's logs, the jets that came in at a time when Israel was in control of the land and control of the sea and control of the air, they had won the war, and some of the Arab states were even suing for peace. At that time, the jets that attacked us had the Star of David painted out. They were totally unmarked, which is bizarre if you think about it. But that's how it went. We didn't know we were safe until over 24 hours later when the America...
How long was the attack itself?
Okay,
how long was the ship under attack?
Between 1 and 2 hours. Anybody that was in combat and ask that kind of a question in Vietnam, in World War II, they'll all tell you at different times because time kind of stands still. But according to the logs and working backwards, we figure it's between 1 and 2 hours.
Wow.
All right. So
and
it was,
during this time, was there
ever...
Well,
I might add that bullets were coming through the bulkhead. We were in a steel ship, but these were armor-piercing bullets. They were coming through like paper.
So they weren't kidding when they started this attack.
Well,
they were
no,
not.
The records,
the intent was to kill everyone on board.
The record show, according to the torpedo boat captains and the pilots that they've talked to, that what they thought they were doing, at least according to them, was coming after an enemy vessel that was shelling its Sinai Peninsula military site from the sea, and they were out to seek, locate, and destroy. And that's what their orders were. Now, interesting to note that we were the only vessel anywhere in the area, and that once they discovered, I'll put quotes around that, once they discovered their mistake, the Israelis, from that day to this, never have gone looking for the offending vessel, because as far as I'm concerned, that was a story somebody made up. There wasn't any ship out there shelling from the sea. I can guarantee you that, because we were there.
The Liberty was specifically sent to monitor the Arab-Israeli conflict ongoing in the region, and they were a command communications ship designed to gather intelligence information. Some people say that during that time, the Israelis were trying to cover up war crimes, crimes of blatant murder of Arab and Egyptian soldiers in the desert. Do you think any of that is true?
Well, do I think it's true? I don't know. What I have heard over the last 40 years is that Israeli military people themselves have come forward and said that at the time all this started, the Israelis were purported to have Arab prisoners out in the desert there at the, in the area of the Sinai, digging a hole, and then they were being killed and buried in the hole. I don't know. I wasn't there. I was busy trying to survive.
Well, the government of Israel has managed to keep this secret of for all these years, even though survivors have spoken out and Israeli perpetrators have told the truth about what happened that day.
Yes, ma'am. And not only that, it's not just Israel. And Israel's story has changed and expanded and been refined over the last 40 years. Not only that, but as recently as about 3 or 4 years ago, the State Department supposedly revisited the issue for a Middle East conference they were holding in Washington. And after a half day about the USS Liberty, they announced that after reviewing everything, they had come to the conclusion that the original finding that it was a mistake was accurate. Now, I can take the story that Israel has put out piece by piece, and it falls apart the minute you look at it with any scrutiny whatsoever. And yet it all hangs together. If you don't know anything about the military, you don't know anything about the war, it all sounds plausible, their story.
And
they claim that we're being
plausible
shown
to the layman, right?
To the lay person of any country, the idea of some mystery vessel shelling a position from the sea and calling for help, and the torpedo boat captains say they made a mathematical error when they spotted our ship on radar. They misread and miscalculated about 7.5 to 8 knots and misread it, you ready for this, as 24 knots. And if we were going that fast, they reasoned, which is accurate, that we would have had to have been a destroyer or better, and that they wouldn't be able to attain us. That is, they couldn't catch us. So they called in an airstrike.
Now, key word is, if you were traveling at 24 knots, key word.
And leaving the area. And yet,
but you said that you were traveling at about 5 knots, according to the log and according to everyone
to eight,
on board.
Somewhere in there. You know, it varied up and down hardly ever more than 8 knots. We were traveling very slow, keep things calm. We were traveling in a pattern. We hit the same points every time and turned around and came back the other way and just made circles, loops. Israel said not only that. Israel said that they had never identified the ship. They claimed we weren't flying an American flag, and just kind of a four-year information, one of the battle flags that the jet pilots shot away, and they shot like three of them down, we finally had to run up the holiday flag, which is humongous, on an outside line because the original lanyard that it would be put on, hoisted on, was shot away. One of those shot-up battle flags is on display at the museum open to the public at NSA at Fort Meade, Maryland. Israel said that we were not flying a flag, okay? Israel says that the torpedo boats, when they got close enough to see us, misidentified us as an Egyptian warship, the Al-Khazir. Now, all of that stuff sounds plausible. All right, the heat of battle, they attacked somebody in the heat of battle that they thought was an enemy ship, and they were responding to shell fire from the sea. It all makes perfect sense until you start to just scratch away at it a little bit. The ship that they said they thought we were, when they said we were going 24 knots, but when they got to see us, they identified us as the Al-Khazir. Yeah, it was an Egyptian warship. It was in port. It had a top speed of 5 to 7 knots, and it had no weapons whatsoever. We had more weapons with our 50 caliber machine guns, and they certainly couldn't shell from 13 miles away.
Okay? So it wasn't them, that's for sure.
So nobody on our side has ever raised the issue of 24 knots, how could you possibly misidentify it as the Al-Khazir? If you looked it up in the book, it would have told you the speed and the weaponry. No weapons and a high speed of 7 knots, even if you didn't know it was in port. They said they hadn't identified us, and yet on a Thames television special about 10 years later, one of the senior officers, Israeli defense officers from their war room, admitted that they had identified the USS Liberty as a U.S. intelligence ship, and then he went off duty for 8 hours, and when he came back, there was no new information, so he assumed it had left the area, since why would a ship stay in one place for more than 8 hours? Well, that sounds cool unless you go back and say they identified it as the intelligence ship Liberty. Russian intelligence ships used to show up before a missile shot off Cape Canaveral, Cape Kennedy. They'd stay for the missile shot, and they'd stay after to collect as much information as they could. All intelligence vessels from all nations did the same thing, and the Liberty was no exception. We couldn't get there ahead of time because nobody knew the war was going to start. We got there soon after. We stayed on station, and we would have stayed on station well after it ended to collect any shutdown information we could. So he knew better, but the public didn't. Also, they said, again, we were flying no flag, and yet in that same Thames television show, they interviewed the senior torpedo boat captain who on the air announced, after the torpedo hit, through the smoke and flames, and he smirks, he says, I saw the red and white of the flag, and I thought that maybe we had hit a Russian ship, and boy, were we going to be in trouble. That's the gist of it. And people heard that, and they smirked, or they laughed, or they for whatever. I picked up on, and not too many people did. He wasn't supposed to see the red and white of our flag because the official story was we weren't flying one. Of course, we were. All
Let
of those
me, you know,
come together to say the whole story makes no sense, and yet even our State Department, as recent as a couple of years ago, found it made sense to them.
You know, Joe, we were talking prior the other day, and you and I, and you had asked, you had told me this story about the A.J. Crystal book. And we have a question here from Ali in England. Now, one of our listeners, and he asks, A.J. Crystal claims that there have been a number of congressional investigations. Many people claim A.J. Crystal has lied. Can Joe confirm that this claim of congressional investigations is a lie?
It's a misstatement. A.J. Crystal had been a U.S. Navy pilot. He had been a U.S. Navy judge, advocate, lawyer. You'd think he was solid U.S., but he did a paper for his doctoral thesis on the Liberty, which turned into that book. And in doing it, he interviewed a lot of Israeli people, Mossad, military. He traveled to Israel so many times they recognized him and said hi to him when he came into the country. And in order to maintain his objectivity, he stayed with the Mossad people he was investigating or interviewing. He stayed in the homes of the military officers and became friends with them. I don't count that as objectivity. The congressional investigations he refers to are not a congressional investigation into what happened. Even our what he's referring to is some congressman did some superficial look into some part of it. Again and again, it's superficial, and it was never a full-fledged, honest to God, let's find out what happened, let's reach a reasonable conclusion based on facts type research by Congress. It's never happened. Even the Navy Court of Inquiry that was held and convened immediately after the attack sent in a report to Washington, D.C. that was rewritten before it was sent out for signature.
Rewritten,
and some of the officers didn't want to sign it.
Really?
Wow. Officers have come forward after they've retired and wouldn't lose their pensions and told stories, including Ward Boston, told stories about what happened during just that incident. Now, Jay Crystal misrepresents things in that book. It has been read and evaluated by the Norfolk Naval History Museum, and the young lady that did that asked me what I thought before she had even looked at it, and I said, first, you read it and tell me what your conclusions are, and I'll tell you what I feel. And she came back, and she said exactly what I've said. If you read that book, the documentation is good. The book has good information in it, but the conclusions reached are not backed up by the book. The material in the book suggests a totally different conclusion, one that does not talk of mistake.
And yet, the conclusion that Jake Crystal came up with is different from his own information during the course of the book itself.
That's what I'm saying. And what I really, based on my knowledge of him and the things I've seen, several different things that I've seen, it is my opinion that he was not the objective observer he should have been to write such a paper or to convert it to a book. And his interest does not lie with the United States in this matter.
Let me ask you something. Zico in Palestine has a question. He's a listener. And he asked, did the Egyptian Navy help the USS Liberty at any time during or after the attack?
No, not as far as I know. As far as I know, no one did except the Israelis sent out a helicopter. And originally the helicopter came out and the pilot had orders. He thought he was coming to, again, an enemy ship, and he was told there were enemy sailors in the water, and he was told to pick them up, and if they were Arab-speaking, to take them to point A, and if they were American or English-speaking, he was to take them to point B. I don't know why his command, the command that was sending this helicopter out, would have thought there would have been American, English-speaking sailors on an Egyptian ship. There were no men in the water, by the way, but the helicopter came out with armed men. We saw the armed men. We thought they were there to shoot us. At one point, a helicopter dropped a note that they would like to lower a representative of the U.S. Embassy down onto the deck, and we weren't having anybody come on the deck. We were ready to shoot them with a .45. So we waved everybody off. The first help we had was when the U.S. Navy ship Davis showed up and highlined men and supplies to us, and the America showed up and started helicoptering off the dead, the wounded, and providing assistance to us. So
we're gonna take a short break right now. This is just fascinating. I want you to know, Joe, I'm just astounded by all the information that we keep getting from this and the different perspectives. This is Jill Lentini, folks, from the U.S. survivor of the USS Liberty, a Navy intelligence ship that was attacked by Israelis and killed and wounded hundreds of American soldiers.
We were ordered away from the area, but the message got lost. Maybe when we come back, we can talk about that.
I would love to, and we'll be right back, folks.
Got questions? The library's got answers. And books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
This land is yours.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact the world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, 5 to 6 p.m. Pacific, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you.
This is Gore Vidal. Can you name the one country on earth where the government can steal elections, strip away basic rights, spy on civilians, launch wars based on lies, and where the people do not take over the nation's capital in protest? If you said the United States, you'd be right. So let's remedy that by calling our Congress members and asking them to support the impeachment of George Bush and Dick Cheney. This message is sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
More than 1 million children are forced into prostitution every year because of sex tourism. Morocco has become a favorite destination. The economic difficulties contribute to the alarming growth of this industry. SOS Morocco's mission is to let the world know that it's against the law, a human and moral crime, to travel to Morocco with the intent to engage in sexual activity with a child. Please visit SOSMorocco.org for more information and to support our endeavors.
One bright sunny morning, in the shadow of the city wall, by the relief of the...
Hello everybody, this is Bassin of the People Speak Radio Show. Welcome back. We've got a great guest here tonight, Joe Lentini, survivor of the USS Liberty. Joe has really given us an interesting perspective on that infamous day and the attack. Joe, you were talking about, you wanted to make a statement about something just before we had left. I'm sorry, I didn't hear it exactly.
Okay, yes. One of the, what I like to refer to as CYA, and it's cover your behind, euphemistically, things that happened after the attack is that the Pentagon issued word to the public that they had sent out, they had decided even at 13 miles in international waters, we were too close to a war zone and that we should move 100, 200, 300 miles away. We could still do our job. And that they had sent a message telling us to move. And that message, unfortunately, got rerouted all around the world, misrouted around the world to all these different stations, and didn't show up, arrive at the ship until after the attack. Isn't it a shame? If it had arrived first, we wouldn't have been there. The attack wouldn't have happened. We tried.
So you guys made a lot of mistakes, according to Israel, that day.
Yeah, well...
Or Israel did.
Well, as far as that message that was sent to us to tell us to move goes... Again, it sounds great if you don't know anything about the military and the way in 1967 it handled communications. The minute we came through the Straits of Gibraltar, we did what they called chopped. That is, we signed on to the 6th Fleet. We let the 6th Fleet know we were there. The flag officer that was running it was on board the USS America, the big aircraft carrier. And we also copied Washington, D.C., NSA, everybody knew that we were now part of the 6th Fleet. What that meant was all ships attached to the 6th Fleet who had traffic or messages, all the messages were sent to one comm center. it wasn't like a mail, a letter going in the mail that could be accidentally misrouted or lost in a mail room. Messages were sent to the comm center, and according to how important they were, what precedent was assigned to them, they were broadcast repeatedly, day in and day out for days, over multiple frequencies, and every ship in the fleet, in the Med, in the 6th Fleet, copied all messages transmitted, then went through them. A lower-level sailor would go through them and hunt for the ones for his ship. The ones that weren't for his ship were put in a burn bag and destroyed. The ones that were for his ship were looked at and evaluated and decided who on the ship needed to see him, and they were routed within the ship. Saying that an order to move was misrouted to all these shore stations makes absolutely no sense. Also, any time the USS Liberty was ordered to move, and that type of what we referred to as general service communications was sent out, a similar message was sent out over different frequencies from the National Security Agency at Fort Meade, also confirming we should move. That message was never received, and the last time I talked to an active director, they had never heard of such a message. So what I'm saying is that it was a nice ploy, but it doesn't hold water.
Well, not only doesn't it hold water, really, what does it say to a state of, at the time it was a state of the art intelligence ship on an investigation of an active ongoing war that you missed every single notification, that you didn't get anything right at that point.
Well,
that doesn't say a whole lot for our communication.
No one was supposed to question that, you see. It's just the idea that we tried, and through no fault of our own, this message got mishandled and mishandled and mishandled again, so that it showed up a day after instead of 2 or 3 days before. And, gee, you know, boy, what a shame, but that's the way things go. And nobody really looked close at it because nobody outside of the military understands how military did their communications to ships at that time. Now, a similar issue, I suppose, is on the 8th of June, many of the Arab states were already suing for peace. Israel had won the war. They just didn't want it to end until they had annexed the land that they wanted to annex.
Well, that sounds like a familiar
history
story.
History shows us that at that time, there really wasn't any danger from any Arab attack, and the only group in the area that could be an aggressor was Israel. Everybody else had been decimated.
You know, we have Zico on the line calling from the Middle East on line 3, and he has a question for you, Joe.
Hello.
Hello, Joe. Good evening.
Good evening.
I have three questions for you, sir, if you don't mind.
If I can answer them, I will.
Yes, please, I'd appreciate. First question is this. After the attack on your SS Liberty, 36 hours later, President Johnson by then did not take any action. He hid the whole accident on the Pentagon. Is that right or wrong? Second
That's
question
accurate.
Is this.
They chose to call it a mistake, and I think if you look at the political machine in this country, you could understand why. The president, according to information we've picked up from the Johnson Library, his handlers in the White House recommended in memo form that he stay at arm's distance from anything having to do with the USS Liberty so as not to anger the Israeli supporters in this country. So, yeah, I can understand why it was done, but you're absolutely right. In fact, President Johnson called back the first flight of jets that were sent to our aid, and they were ordered to land on shore, unload their weapons, and return to their aircraft carrier. And when the America launched aircraft to come to our aid, they too were called back by President Lyndon Johnson. And he was heard to say something akin to, "I don't care if every man on that ship is lost, I am not going to embarrass an ally." And there's people alive, still alive today, that heard that over the loudspeaker on the America and on a couple of other ships that we're monitoring. So, yes, you're right.
Okay.
He took no action.
My second question, please. According to news by then, President Nasser of Egypt announced that at 3 o'clock a.m., June 6th, President Lyndon Johnson and the ex-Soviet Union Prime Minister Kosi Jin called him at 3 o'clock in the morning. They told him, okay, Nasser, there is no war, no, don't attack, relax, and Israel will not attack. So tomorrow, President Nasser sent us the Vice President to Washington to negotiate peace. So Nasser took their word, and he put down all his weapons. His pilots went back to their barracks. But what happened? 6 o'clock in the morning, Israel attacked. Have you, when you were in your boat, close to the shore, have you seen any Egyptian aircraft were flying before the Israelis, please?
No, well, all I can tell you is that when we got on site, right up until the time we were attacked, the only aircraft we saw were slow-flying boxcar types with the Star of David, flying so low that we could see the pilots, and we waved to them, and they waved to us. And history tells us they must have been taking pictures, because U.S. pilots, jet pilots, say that for the accuracy that the Israeli pilots, it turned out to be Israeli pilots, for the accuracy that they showed hitting the strategic targets of the Liberty, they had to have seen photographs and been thoroughly briefed on our ship before they ever left land and came to us. We never saw anything but those slow-flying aircraft with the Star of David and the jets that attacked us. And we didn't see another Star of David until the torpedo boats caught up to us, and they were brazen and bold enough to leave their banner flying at the back, at the aft end of the torpedo boats. That was the first time, through smoke and all, we saw the Star of David. We did not see any other aircraft or any other boats or ships anywhere on the horizon. No, sir.
Okay, my third question, I wish you won't be embarrassed. I'm going to be a little bit tough. Why, from then till now, none of you, the sailors, got the courage and went out of the States and make a conference telling the world what happened? And is it true that United States of America, the Pentagon, your headquarters, have threatened you, if you open your mouth, you will be punished or anything? You must not talk to the media. Is that true, please?
Well, okay, now I'm going to... I give talks about this, and if I don't qualify it, it means I know it for a fact, and if I don't, I qualify it. I'm qualifying this. Others of my shipmates have said that they were threatened by senior line officers and people in civilian clothes, and they were told not to ever discuss the attack on the Liberty, and they were sent to all sorts of places. And even after they got to their next duty station, some of the men say that they were told under penalty of jail or other things not to talk. For 40 years, the crew has been working hard to get the word out. As a matter of fact, during the Desert Storm celebration in Washington, D.C., one of our supporters had managed to get us an interview as a group with then-President Bush, Daddy George Bush Sr. And the Captain McGonagall, was in his dress whites with the Medal of Honor around his neck, and the crew and their families were at the White House on the grounds in the garden waiting for George. George was out at Arlington at a ceremony for the showing respect for any of our people killed during Desert Storm. When he showed up at the White House, his limousine stopped, rolled down the window, he waved, and George Sununu and Scowcroft got out, and they came up and apologized, said the president was running late. He asked us to come by and to tell you how proud he was of you, yada-da-yada, and then they left and we left. The next day, Sununu claimed he'd never done that, but somebody had a picture of him, he had to take that back.
Well, I'm not a fan of the
Some of the guys say they have. I don't know. Listen, I don't know that for a fact, but I do know that for 40 years we have been trying, without success, I think for the same political reasons, to get people to recognize that the attack, for whatever reason, and it doesn't matter what reason, the attack was deliberate. The fact is they did attack us. And the fact is that the damage that they did showed premeditation. They knew what was where on our ship. You don't hunt for and shoot targets on a ship and a jet all at the same time. You have to know where they are, or you have to fly passes to identify them. These guys came in shooting. So,
thank you, Zico. We've got a lot. Zico, we have a lot of questions that we have to ask. We have a lot of people waiting in line to talk, but you are wonderful. Okay. Thank you so much for calling in. John from Iowa would like to know, which of any politicians have helped the USS Liberty survivors in seeking justice on this? You know, this is something I think is very important.
I wish I could give you the names. I'm terrible on names. We've said senators and congressmen, once they got out of office, it was a politician that thought he had us that meeting with George Bush. We've had military officers all the way up through it, including the chief of naval operations, that once they got out of the military, 100% supported us and went public with statements that it had to be a deliberate attack. There was no way that it could have been anything but. Previous directors of NSA have supported that and supported that premise unofficially when they were in office. We've got a number of politicians that active that I will not name, but they support what we say. But for the same reason as in 1967, they're not going to do anything about it.
If they want to be reelected,
they're not going to anger the people that support Israel.
Well, this is the point. Let me ask you two questions. First of all, like you said earlier on our break, that the guise of anti-Semitism has held everyone at bay from speaking out the truth. Now, let me ask you, is Israel really at this point an ally to America, or is it an enemy to America?
Well, I wouldn't go so far as to say it was an enemy, but I think like the United States and like many other countries, if not all countries, when it's in the best interest of Israel, they're our buddy, and when it's not, they're not. We used to get all our Middle East intelligence from the Mossad until we discovered we were doing some of the Mossad's work because they were modifying the way that they were telling us stories. So now we have our own people on the ground to confirm or get us original material. Anti-Semitism isn't an issue. It's a hide behind. The Assault on the Liberty by Jim Ennis, which is not an anti-Semitic book, it's a book about the attack on the Liberty. It tells about the attack, period. It's well documented. It came out in paperback a block from the White House, and when I bought a book and showed it to some of my coworkers at the Veterans Administration, and they wanted some, so I went back the next day to get some books for them, they were all gone because, unfortunately, the owner of the bookshop was of the Jewish faith, and he had been called by B'nai B'rith and told that that book was an anti-Semite book, and so he took it off the stands and shipped it back to the publisher because he took the stand that he was not about to have any anti-Semitism-type books on his shelf. Rightly so. Rightly so.
Well, absolutely.
But it wasn't
anti-Semitism is hate. The attack on the Liberty has nothing to do with anti-Semitism. It was an attack on American ship.
No, and I think if people would look it up and do a little research, they find that Semitism doesn't refer only to the Israelis. And being an anti-Semite does not mean you are anti-Israel or anti-Israelis. I'm certainly not. I grew up with a Jewish family. I went to synagogue. And that's pretty good for an Italian kid whose rest of the family was Catholic. And then I went to Southern Baptist Church. I'm currently going to a Catholic church. I believe in God. And I figure that in 1967, Israel was doing what they thought they had to do. Doesn't make it right. We were supposed to be allies. But there's certainly no anti-Semitism in telling the truth about what happened on that attack. It's very hard to find that that attack was a mistake if you figure that you can't have it both ways. Either we were flying a flag or we weren't. Their own captain says that we were.
Joe,
we can't be doing 24 knots and be in a ship that only does 5. We can't be shelling from the sea if we don't have weapons to do it. Even that helicopter that flew out with the armed guards because they thought they were going to have to pick up men in the water with the strange order that NSA recently released the tapes about, was told to return to base as soon as the pilot called in that he could see the American flag flying and the ship was not making any hostile actions. And the minute he said that, he was told to stop transmitting and to return to base, which he did.
Joe,
that's not anti-Semitism. That's the facts of what happened.
Absolutely. When you, at the risk of sounding like this is, I just can't believe Johnson's reaction to this. The fact that he literally was heard to say that he would just as soon see every man on that ship sink rather than embarrass an ally.
Yeah, the way he put it was, as it's been quoted, I don't care if. Now, as commander in chief, that's a chargeable statement. But
absolutely,
nobody took him to task for it because it was the state of Israel. If it had been any other country, things would have been different. But because
Let me ask you, when
Israel,
you saw Israel's attack on Lebanon, and the world was literally crying for America to intervene and call for a ceasefire, America refused at that time. Did you feel some kind of bond to that moment?
Not really. Politically, again, I try to be a realist.
Okay.
And I look at it, and we've got some of the same issues, the control of the media, very large contributions. There's a lot of stuff going on that would make a politician not want to appear publicly to antagonize the state of Israel. There's a lot of political power there. And in the past, our country has said when they came to us and asked that they wanted to expand their borders for security way back in the 50s, 60s, various presidents have said, maintain the status quo, or we'll pull the benefits. You know, we'll back away. Well,
right.
In 1967, they wanted to expand their borders, and they didn't ask this time. Somebody got smart and said, we'll take it, and then we'll argue for the next 40 years about giving it back.
Well, I have a question from one of our guests.
Lebanon was kind of politically I understood it. Did I relate it to the Liberty? No. Did I understand why? Yes. In answer to your question.
Okay. Fair enough. And I appreciate that you are being candid and fair. And I appreciate that. Joe from the Canadian Rockies asks: is there any class action legal action in the works, or some kind of a demand for a new investigation?
Yes and no. Was it Joe? That's a good name, since I'm a Joe. Yes and no. We filed official. There is a law on the books that deals with crimes, war crimes, and they're supposed to be reported and acted on by senior officers in the field. But since nobody did, we took it upon ourselves to advise the proper channels, and we filed a legal, absolutely legal document with the federal government, with the military, that demanded an action of them that said, hey, we've got eyewitnesses that the Israeli torpedo boats strafed life boats that were in the water. So the violation of the Geneva Convention. It's a war crime. There were several other things that were listed. It all went, and it's been totally ignored and poo-pooed and passed on, and it has died. We have tried to get, we've done everything we could to get a congressional investigation that is legitimate, that is, looks at it and looks and doesn't take the attitude that the eyewitnesses are not reliable, so we're not even going to ask them. You know, that's what Jay Crystal tells people. He didn't interview any of us. We're eyewitnesses, and notoriously eyewitnesses aren't reliable, so nobody's asked us.
You know, Joe, I'll tell you, there is so much here. It is such a, it's such an unbelievable story, and yet it happened. And you have been a wealth of information. We're going to have to wrap this up. Give me one thing. I'd like you to take 1 minute, because that's all really we have. What do you want to see happen, and what do you want to come out of this, Joe?
What I realistically would like to see happen is people to continue to record historically, accurately, what happened that day. A lot of the texts that cover the Middle East during that period of time cover the attack of the USS Liberty accurately, as far as it was a pre-planned attack. They've gone that way. Even some Israeli authors have gone that way.
Mm-hmm.
Books about the CIA. I'd like to see that gain momentum. I don't really think we'll get a legitimate congressional inquiry, because we'll have the same problem that the State Department had. They can't go public and say that the State of Israel deliberately attacked a U.S. ship and continue to send billions of dollars to them so that they can wage war.
Well, you know, that's honorable, and thank you so much, Joe. We'd like to have you come back with us soon, Joe, if that's okay, and we can count on you. I'm extending the invitation personally.
Absolutely, anytime. And remember, anybody hollering anti-Semite, I went to synagogue. I celebrated Hanukkah. I celebrated all the high holy days with the family I grew up with, and there's a love in my heart for all people and all religions, and anti-Semitism is not a part of this fellow.
Well, thank you very much, Joe. Joe Lentini, folks, from the USS Liberty. Thank you for being with us, everyone. Please join us on Monday with Charlie Giuliani, Tuesdays with myself, Basma Farhat, and Wednesday with David Swanson. Thank you, Joe. You have a great evening. We'll be in touch, and we'll get you back here soon.
Fine, and if you want to send me email questions, I'll be glad to respond to them, and we can send them back to the people.
Great, and for those of you that are interested, the websites are on our site, www.thepeoplespeak.net. Thank you very much, everybody, and
thanks,
good night. Bye-bye.
One bright sunny morning, in the shadow of the table, by the relief of death, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is yours. This land is my land, from California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.